Thank you, Bob Kessler. Hi, everybody. It's the Monday edition of our program. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy. So easy to reach us, 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy.
I am so ready for fall. Bring it on.
Why would you say that? Summer's the best time of the year. Fall starts to get a little cold. Kids going back to school. Oh, that's why, because your kids are back in school.
It's been great.
Got a little quiet at the house. That could be part of it.
I hope they speak about 9/11 at schools, because they really haven't done a lot of it in the past, in elementary and junior high.
Yeah, it certainly needs to be discussed, right? We've talked about this before. Whenever it's a day like, I guess kids are off for Martin Luther King Day, right? So you can't really talk about Martin Luther King on the day. But there are certain basics the kids need to know, and schools should put together some sort of a lesson plan based on it, and 9/11's way among them.
Absolutely.
You know? I don't know how much of the storm coverage you watched over the weekend.
Quite
I would watch
a bit.
It for a bit. You did too? Good.
And I woke up at 3 in the morning to see if Florida was still standing.
Yeah.
I know the Hurricane Irma did like a maneuver, like faked
yeah.
Florida out a little
juke
bit.
Move.
Yes. The Keys were really ravaged. It's pretty
bunch
bad.
Of the small islands. I read a story about what's going on St. Martin's. Did you read anything about St. Martin?
Yes.
Evidently, it's in such bad shape that people are just roaming the streets, stealing food. There's no food. It's awful. It's horrible. All right. So there's a phenomenon that I had no idea existed, and I'm sure you saw it too, where the sea basically gets sucked up, and places where the ocean normally is, there's just no ocean.
Is that the storm surge that I've been hearing about, or is that a completely different thing? Because I know the water gets sucked into the hurricane, and there were boats just on
dry
sand.
Land. Yeah.
No water.
They showed these guys walking, like there's a pier. I can't remember what city it's in. So you saw it too.
Yes.
So there's these guys walking way, way, way beyond the pier where normally the ocean waters would be way, you know, it'd be so deep.
Uh-huh.
But
no water.
There's no water at all. And they said the water will return, and they're trying to determine how quickly it will return.
I think it's already back.
Is it already back?
And they warned you not to walk, even though everybody was, because as quickly as it went away, it can come back. This happened with one of the tsunamis as well, where you just saw video of the water like being sucked up and just beaches.
It seems impossible.
It does.
Because that's the volume of water is incomprehensible that much water could just be sucked up and be gone. And it's not, obviously, as we said, it's not gone for good, but how strange is that? So that happened in a lot of Florida, and it happened in the Bahamas. What a strange weekend it was.
Now, I know that Hurricane Irma, I keep hearing reports it wasn't as bad as anticipated,
but
it's still pretty terrible
still
on
terrible.
Some areas.
Yeah. A storm the size of a state. Now, Florida is a pretty big state. So when you think about it, if you look at it on a map, you say, a storm can't possibly be as big as this. That's impossible. But no, it's happening.
And Bob Kessler is in the newsroom right now. What is there, 5 million people without power?
I believe it's around 6 million in Florida.
And they can't even estimate when power will be restored,
no,
right, Bob?
They
That's
really
impossible
can.
To
yeah.
guess at this point.
There was an alert that I saw on Facebook, and again, you have to be careful about fake news. Although fake news, wasn't everybody tuned to all the news stations to watch the coverage this weekend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't fake.
Right.
All right. You have to be careful of there were cars that were submerged in water, and they are going to make their way to a used car lot. So you, I don't know how you would check, because it's not like dealers are going to take them knowingly that they were submerged. But I saw a big warning. I don't know. It's not like an iPhone. When you drop your iPhone in water, there's a little dot that turns blue.
Oh.
There should be something like that on a car to show that it's been submerged in water.
That's a big issue because it's hard to detect.
Right.
You know, it's those onboard computer systems that
exactly.
get soaked and everything. So,
so be wary of that.
All right.
And we're talking about storm surge. Peter, do you know a little bit more about this?
Well, it has to do with the immense power of the straight line wind spinning around this hub, if you will. On the north side of the storm, it's blowing from that was blowing basically from east to west. So it's this straight line wind. It's not the storm sucking up water. It's just blowing that hard, that much, that it's pushing it out to sea. It's just pushing that, all that water that all those people are walking on, that naked ocean floor, really. It is just pushing it all out to sea. And then on the other side of the eye, that same immense wind power is going to be shoving water into the land.
And that's the storm surge where the giant waves come crashing in.
Yeah, that's the storm surge is on the return side, where the water that's been shoved out into the ocean is going to be coming back, and it's the wind and gravity trying to bring it back down to level is going to be combining to shove that water back into the land. And that's where the immense power comes from. And a note on your cars.
Yeah.
The best thing that you can do besides CarMax to find out where it came from,
yeah,
is to do things like peeling the mats back in the trunk and looking at places where water could have gotten in and not been dried out.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You got to look in the nooks and crannies for rust.
Yeah. Oh, very good idea.
Thank you for the tip, Peter.
Glad to help as best I can.
You did. You answered all of our questions. We should just keep him on retainer.
I know.
For the whole day.
Kevin, keep Peter on hold, please, throughout the entire show. Let's take a quick break. A lot more to discuss. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. This is Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It is 9/11. Never forget. We'll say that and mean that. And we're also talking about Hurricane Irma. We were talking about cars that have been submerged that are going to make their way to dealers. Somebody said, a friend of mine, a car dealer, says to be suspicious of new carpet in used cars and any moldy smells that may indicate the car was flooded.
That seems to make sense. Sure.
And once that smell happens, that's pretty hard to get rid of.
Oh, yeah.
You can hang all those little Christmas trees, scent things in your car. It's not going to make a difference.
So a dealer, I would think, I'm hoping they're ethical enough to disclose, you would imagine.
Right, but what if they're bamboozled?
Oh, I guess they could be. But although my experience is they're usually pretty sharp to look for the right things. When you're trying to trade your car in, more times than not, they really give it an extensive search.
And if CarMax can give you a Carfax report on the history of it, why can't dealers have access to that?
Yeah, I would think they would. I would imagine.
Also, Bill, question for you.
Yes.
Wasn't there a bunch of people that were going to turn fans on to blow the hurricane away?
Yes.
Maybe they all blew the water away. That's why it went out to sea. They pointed it in the wrong direction.
All right.
I also saw that there was a movement of people shooting guns at the hurricane.
Oh, like, they did?
They had the mayor or somebody had to release a statement about why you should not shoot guns into the hurricane.
That's smart. When winds are whirling around, you shoot.
I like the guy that comes up with that idea who goes, I know this, hear me out on this. I know this is going to sound crazy, but what we need to do is get our guns and shoot at the hurricane. So that guy is one level, but then the other guys who agree with him and go, yeah, that's just crazy enough to work.
I think the two movements should combine forces. You know, you put the fans behind the bullets, it'll fly faster.
Right.
It'll work.
That's, we've solved many mysteries today.
I think the shooting the guns at the storm thing was kind of an Onion type piece. I hope it was a joke. And people were then maybe taking it seriously, so law enforcement had to say, no, do not do that. Because, you know, even if you get four people doing that...
That's four too many.
What the hell has happened to this country?
I don't know. I will say this. There was a guy, and I was reminded by this by Peter, our last caller, who really seemed extremely knowledgeable on all things hurricane and storm related. Did you see this guy who they just randomly interviewed on Fox News who was just brilliant?
No.
All right, so there's a reporter walking down a beach in Florida just trying to find people to get their take on the storm. And then listen to this guy that he found.
Kevin was on the phone ordering lunch.
Now, this guy is quiet at first, but then...
Okay.
Yeah.
Let us ask you a question. What do you think about the storm, the risk to your own safety at this point?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
What do you think about the storm, the power, the ferocity, and the risk to your own safety at this point?
Well, at this point, I'm very relieved to discover that as we speak, the eye of the storm is practically due south of us by 220 miles, okay, because it's crossing the 80th meridian, which is 80 degrees west longitude. So I'm not so worried because it's so far away, and it's bearing, as of 8 p.m.,
westbound.
Well, not just westbound. It was 275 degrees. That's only 1/15th above due west toward true north.
Is he right?
So this thing is moving and has been moving in a very westerly direction. And because it's several hundred miles south, the risks are less and less. I'm not worried. I don't think it's going to get much worse than what we're seeing right here.
Thanks.
So this guy knew meridian, he knew longitude, he was doing fractions in his head. If they don't just give him his own show, something's gone horribly wrong. He was brilliant.
So what made you think of this when Peter knew more than we did, and you got to be careful who you ask questions
to? No, because that happens on a daily basis, but I was just impressed that he had, you know, this working knowledge of everything storm-related. That was very impressive.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the reporters that have been out in the torrential rain and the high-powered winds? Because I know everybody's making fun of them, but I got to be honest with you. Make fun of them all you want. I watched almost all their reports all weekend.
It's so much more effective. It's dangerous, but it's so much more effective for them to be out in the middle of it where you can see it. I mean, Terry even said, we were watching it together. She goes, they could do this from a studio, you know, and they could, but it just seems more immediate and more important if you're right out there in the storm. Hats off to guys like Anderson Cooper, because I kept thinking to myself, if you're the CNN news boss and you say, Anderson, how about this? What if we send you to the most dangerous part of Florida and you'll just report for there? Don't you go, I'm Anderson Cooper. Send that guy. Just pointed some other guy in the room. I'm not going to that. But he went. He was there for 2 days.
Everybody has been making fun of these people.
And I'm not making fun of them.
No, because I was glued to it all weekend long just because you could see how bad it was.
Right. Right. I was afraid to go out and do the Walk of Fame thing with you. They're like, we'll send you guys out. You'll host the Walk of Fame. I go, too dangerous.
Oh, but that's
you,
right.
You were brave. You did it. But
you need to get a body double.
I'm going to look into that. I'm definitely going to look into that.
All right. Well, there is something involving the Waffle House, and we touched on this a little bit on Friday on our stream, the Stream of Consciousness, the bonus hour. If you haven't listened, you should check it out. It's kind of fun. It's kind of Bill and I unleashed.
Yeah. No leashes.
And FEMA judges how bad a disaster is based on the Waffle House Index.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that after the news. We are also going to pitch the head of Waffle House. We've got to start opening them around the Chicago metro area.
I want one on each side of us.
I want one as my next door neighbor.
Yeah. We got to get some Waffle Houses here in Chicago. This is insane. All right. All that's coming up right after Bob Kessler's news. So stay where you are. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Well, you want some good food when you're not out hens. The big yellow sign is your new best friend. They got a waffles and bacon and coffee too, but an all-star breakfast comes with some roux. Cause this ain't no waffle zoo, it ain't no waffle barn. It's a place a waffle business run with style and charm. Save that rowdy biz for the other waffle shops. Follow the rules or someone's calling the cops.
I don't know who wants to introduce our next guest because I think we're both equally as excited.
We, both you and I have a love affair with the Waffle House. Now, there aren't any near us in Chicago,
yet.
And our goal is to change that right here and now. Pat Warner joins us right now, the Director of Public Relations and External Affairs for Waffle House, Inc., the parent company of one of the most delicious breakfast places ever, the Waffle House. Pat, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. How are y'all doing today?
We're doing fine. Can you tell that we're not faking this? We love your restaurant.
I can tell. I can tell. That's very feels very good for us down here in Atlanta to hear about that up there in Chicago.
Well, Bill has been going to the Waffle House for many years. I had never been until 3 years ago when I heard the Angels sing. I had that hockey puck hash brown, and your pecan waffles are. Please come to Chicago. Please come to LaGrange, Illinois, or any suburb that you want. Please. Why are you not here?
We will get there eventually. Right now we're in southern Illinois, and we'll work our way up there. I think Chicago will be a great market for us. But our first ride, we're kind of slow and steady. We started in Atlanta, and we have a lot of restaurants down here. We're still opening up restaurants in the Atlanta area. We have more than about 250 in Metro Atlanta. Sorry. but I think we'll get to Chicago eventually. It's hard to put a timeline on that.
In our lifetime, could you just say that?
Wendy and I can go out after the show today, Pat, and scout locations. You say the word, we'll find a place.
I'm sure you can. We actually have some suppliers in Chicago, and we were up there a few years ago meeting with them, walking downtown, and some Chicago police officers stopped us. They thought we were scouting locations because they saw our waffles. They were very excited. We had to kind of let them down. They were just there for a meeting.
Oh.
But, yes, if you find some sites, send them our way. We're always looking for good locations.
Well, we wanted to talk to you first to profess our love for the Waffle House, and also because the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, of course, actually uses the Waffle House as kind of an unofficial index of natural disasters. Explain that a little bit, Pat.
Yeah, we're one of many businesses that work in the private public sector partnership with FEMA, but it really got started with FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate, who recently retired. When he was the emergency manager in Florida in 2004, there were like three hurricanes in 1 month, and he was telling his people that if they were driving and they saw Waffle House open, keep driving. If they saw Waffle House on a generator, then they were on a limited menu, and drive to the first Waffle House that was closed, see no damage in that area. Is really severe. So he kind of coined that, and then it kind of taken off from there. But yes, like a lot of companies, we share information with the state and federal governments on open, close. It kind of helps them get a sense of how the storm's going. And really for us, it's a point of pride. We're 24-hour restaurants. That's probably why y'all want us to come up there to Chicago, because I'm sure y'all are hungry about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So, well, that's one of the reasons.
Whatever you're out there doing at 2 o'clock in the morning, so we're open 24 hours a day. So it's a point of pride for us to get open quickly after storms.
That's one of the reasons, Pat, is that you guys are open 24 hours. But the other reason, and I said this to Wendy the other day, I've gone into a Waffle House. I've gotten an order of waffles, an omelet, some French toast, some eggs, a milkshake, and it's like $3 for everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we especially at 2 o'clock in the morning, people have trouble, counting money.
Yeah,
so we make it easy on them.
We have about 20 texts coming through right now at 312-981-7200. Please, 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 Waffle House. Waffle House, best hash browns, worth the drive. I swear to God, I'm ready to go after the show today to Southern Illinois. And explain all the different ways you can get that little hash brown hockey puck that is so amazing. I like it just the genuine, traditional way. But you can get them how many ways?
Well, you can get them... we're all cooked to order, so if you talk to your cook, you can get them anyway. But on the menu, we have scattered, smothered, covered, trunk, top, diced, capped, peppered, and countried.
Yep.
Or for those who really are adventurous, they get it all the way with all that on it.
What does countried mean? I'm curious.
The gravy?
That's country gravy, correct.
Oh, all right, yeah.
I should be a Southern Belle.
You are, yeah. And you refer to this as the hockey puck?
I do, because it's shaped like that.
Oh, okay. Because yeah, we're the home of the Blackhawks, Pat. We could do a tie-in with them in a minute.
I know. We're in Atlanta, and we don't have hockey down here. They keep taking our teams away from us, so we don't call it a hockey puck down here.
We don't have football here, so I know what you're going through.
Stop it. Yeah, the Bears did lose yesterday. If you laid all of the Smithfield bacon that Waffle House serves in a year end-to-end, it would wrap all the way around the equator. 25,000 miles of a bacon belt.
Wow.
And if you stack all the waffles we serve in 1 year, it'll reach the International Space Station.
Wow.
So that's another trivia for you.
I went in on that project. Pat, explain this to me. I've been in Waffle Houses 150 times in my life, and I'll be there many more times. One of the letters is always out on the sign. There's a light bulb missing, and one of the letters. Why is that? You know it's true. You can't deny it.
Oh yeah. Well, we fired our sign guy.
All right. I think that's part of the charm. I like it more that way. It shows you're flawed. I like that.
Well, the great thing about Waffle House is, like I tell people, we're just common folk. We're not very pretentious about us. We like to have fun inside the restaurant, and I think that's the appeal for Waffle House. You're going to go there, and it's not going to be all, crazy formal. It's going to be kind of laid back, and that's how we are, and that's really, I think, why people enjoy going to Waffle House so much, because they have a good time there.
And it hurts.
Joe Rogers.
It harkens back to the golden days of diners. Every time I'm in there, I feel like it's 1956. I love it.
Well, we try to keep it that way. We're slow to change things because we know people come to Waffle House for the same food. We have regular customers who come in and eat the same thing every day, and we'll try new stuff on the menu, and it doesn't go anywhere because people know what they want. Yep. So we realize that, and so we kind of cater to what we call the Waffle Nation, and they're quick to tell us what they want and what they don't want in their Waffle House. And really, from our standpoint, it's their Waffle House. We're just kind of there. Our customers feel like they own the Waffle House, and we're fine with that. I think that's what makes people keep coming back.
Pat Warner is on the line with us, Director of Public Relations and External Affairs for Waffle House Incorporated. How do you keep your prices so low? I mean, seriously, Bill wasn't kidding. You can get the eggs over easy and a waffle and hash browns and a bevy. And seriously, it is so inexpensive. How do you keep your prices so low?
Well, that's a big point for us is to keep them low. We work with our vendors, obviously, but also, if you look at what we're cooking, it's just basic staples. We're not putting fancy sauces on and that. We're serving quality food, Smithfield bacon, USDA choice hamburgers and steaks. And then we just try to keep the price at the price point that will keep people coming back so they feel like they're not, getting taken, eating a $12 steak, And we call it grits. We could call them polenta and charge them more money, but we keep calling them grits. And we just kind of keep it simple.
Also, I want to know if there's some special recipe for the waffles, because we were talking about Waffle House waffles. I love the pecan ones. And they're not a Belgian waffle, but they're not a smushed waffle. They're like kind of right in the middle, and they are so good. Do you have a special secret ingredient or just love?
Yeah. It's a lot of love. It's secret ingredient, and our waffle bakers are really, really hot. I mean, people laugh when I say that, but they cook them hot and fast, and that's why they're kind of crispy on the outside and yummy, gooey, lovey on the inside. Mm. We have a proprietary recipe. It's a sweet cream waffle made with sweet cream or half and half. So that's one of the ingredients that goes into it. So it's more of a traditional sweet cream waffle versus a Belgian waffle.
Oh, it's so good.
And again, it's kind of a recipe we've had since 1955, and we're not gonna change it because people would tell us about it if we did.
No waffling about the Waffle House, Wendy. That's their rule. So Pat, realistically, be honest with us. What would you say is a target date to have some in and around the Chicagoland area?
Yeah, unfortunately, I cannot give a hard date on that because, like I said, our growth strategy is very slow.
Yeah,
I would say in our lifetimes, let's put it out of that.
All right, like that. We have reason to live now, Wendy.
You don't know how old we are, Pat.
Right. What if we were in our late 80s? You got to hurry up.
Everybody is young at Waffle House,
right?
So I'm assuming y'all are in your mid to late 20s.
Yep.
I'm thinking
dead on target.
So,
yep.
There you go.
Nice lying, Pat. We appreciate it. All right, Pat Warner on the line with us, and Al is a listener who has just called in. You just took your kids for the first time to Waffle House, Al. How was it?
Hello, this is Al.
Go ahead with your story, Pat Warner. We're talking about Waffle House.
Hey, Pat. I've been a fan of yours forever, and on our trip to Florida this year, my kids have been begging me to take them to a Waffle House. We took them to their first Waffle House on our trip to Florida this summer. They couldn't have been happier or more excited. And we put a picture of him in front of their Waffle House on Facebook and for everybody to see. It was the greatest thing in the world. You guys are great. And please bring him to Chicago.
All right, Al, we'll try. And I'm sorry it took you so long to find us. I'm glad you found us, though.
Thank you, Al.
They're right off the interstate, exit 16.
Somebody just texted, driving down to Florida, we counted over 150 Waffle House signs at exit ramps, so we had to try. Glad we did.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, until you go, you don't know the magic of a Waffle House.
Well, Ron White, the comedian, has a joke where he talks about he has a drinking game where he drives down the interstate south and he drinks anytime he sees the word waffle. So I do not recommend that.
No, of course not.
Perhaps he's in an Uber.
Right,
you know?
That's where he is.
All right.
Maybe he's a passenger, yeah.
All right, and before we let you go, Pat, because we know you're busy, listener Ted is on the line. Ted, what did you want to say to Pat Warner of Waffle House?
That would be the longest drinking game ever. I think since we don't know when it's going to come to Chicago, we need to take matters into our own hands. And I'm sorry, Bill Wendy, you're going to get the bill after the show, but we'll load buses and just go take over one somewhere.
Let's do that.
A road trip.
I would love that. All right.
All right. Well, let me know when I'll meet you there. How's that?
All right. You got it. Great idea.
Thank you, Ted. All right, Pat, we're going to let you know which one we choose. I don't know which one the closest to us is.
Downstate Illinois, right, Pat? Is there some in Downstate Illinois?
Yeah, closer to St. Louis.
Yeah. So that's the closest, but it's worth it. I would do it. Yeah. We'll figure something out.
All right. And how are the Waffle Houses doing after Hurricane Harvey? There were some that remained open. And how's it going in Florida right now as FEMA kind of uses an unofficial Waffle House index?
Yeah, Harvey, we're kind of almost back to normal. We have a few restaurants in Brunswick, Texas that the water issue is out. So we're actually bringing in water to keep those restaurants open. This is kind of day one in our recovery for Irma. Irma is a very big storm. It continues to come on up. We have tropical storm warnings in Atlanta. That's how big Irma is.
Right.
So that's kind of scary. Irma really affected. We have close to 250 restaurants affected, and right now we're assessing the damage and seeing which ones we can get open. I don't have the totals, but I do know from Orlando, Tampa down to Key Largo, we only have three restaurants open right now. So
it's pretty bad
there right now. Yeah, it's pretty bad. We got a lot of teams down there trying to get. Mainly right now, we're assessing damage and power to see what we need to do to get the restaurants open. And then tomorrow, we'll be sending in a lot more teams to help our folks down there. But first, we got to make sure we're checking in to make sure all of our associates are fine. Everybody made it through the storm first, and then we'll worry about the restaurants after that.
Well, good luck to you, because I know that the tropical storm now, Irma, is on her way to Atlanta. So stay safe, and it was such a pleasure to meet you.
Well, glad to talk to you, Bill and Wendy, and let me know when the road trip is, and we'll meet you there. How's
you
that?
Got it. I can't wait. That's Pat Warner, Director of Public Relations and External Affairs for Waffle House Incorporated. Visit their website, wafflehouse.com, and tell them how badly you want a Waffle House right here in Chicago. Thanks, Pat. Have a great rest of the week.
He's on hold.
Is he on hold? Right, put me on hold, too, then. I'll talk to him there. All right. Well,
please, will you beg him?
I will beg him.
All right.
I'm not above that. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I'm going to say one last thing about Waffle House, and then I'm not going to mention them again until after 11 o'clock. I'm sure you've experienced this, too, where you travel around to other parts of the country or sometimes even foreign countries, and they have something that they don't have here in Chicago. There would be like a chain of restaurants or something, and you go, oh, I love this so much. I wish so much they had one in my hometown. I would put this way up at the top of my list of any of the places I've ever visited where I go, this would be so perfect to have in town. Cops Frozen Custard in Milwaukee is like that.
Never had that.
I got a couple like that where whenever I go there, I'm like, oh, man, it's great to have them wherever I'm visiting, but I wish so badly they were here also. And that's all I'm going to say about Waffle House.
I would like a brat stop around here, too.
That would be all right. Also
I know
from
it's
Wisconsin.
Very Wisconsin, but we like our brats here in Chicago as well.
Right.
Someone said that there are 18 Waffle Houses in Indianapolis, so that's a little closer than the 16 in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Waffle House...
That's 3.5 hours away, roughly, Indianapolis? About that?
I can't go over 2 hours,
all right.
Even for a Waffle House.
That's your limit? That's your food limit?
Closest Waffle House in Illinois, according to Google, is Collinsville, Illinois, or Granite City.
Those are both quite a haul.
Darn it. Well, in our lifetime.
That's what he said. So if we die, we can sue him if they don't put a Waffle House in. We have that to look forward to.
What are we suing him for? Waffles? Hash browns.
Yeah.
All right.
It's rarely done that way, but yes. All right, we'll take a quick break. We have some news, and then there's a lot more show ahead. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Bob. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And, you know, I think about this, and unfortunately, I would bet each and every one of us has in some way been affected by suicide, and we can't brush it under the rug. We need to talk about it, and there's a big walk that's coming up, and we like to find out more about it. We have Scott Langenecker in the studio with us, board president of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Scott, thanks for coming up. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Scott, there was a time where this was the most taboo of subjects. You just didn't want to talk about suicide. Now we have learned that it's a much better idea to discuss it and to get it out in the open. What shifted, do you think?
Well, for me, I've been involved with this movement for over 15 years, but what shifted for me is the way that the media has handled people that we've lost to suicide, especially big names. One of the biggest one that I think was a watershed moment was when we lost Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I think that just brought it to life that somebody who is so vibrant and funny could suffer so tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's unfortunate that it takes someone of importance in the entertainment industry for us to finally be able to talk about it, because it's been going on, unfortunately, for such a long time.
It has, and as you noted, Wendy, everyone knows someone.
Everyone.
A mother, a father, yep. a friend, a daughter, a son. It's a tragedy that we really can work to avoid.
So in a strange way, when somebody like Robin Williams takes their own life, we've had several keynote musicians over the last couple months who have taken their own lives. In a strange kind of way, the mere fact that the word is out there and you realize that it's permeated society, that so many people are affected by this, in a way, it gets the conversation going. It gets people talking about it and realizing if you're out there and you need help, to get the help, right?
It does, but I think we need to do more.
Yeah.
You know, as we know now, half of the people we lose to suicide have not gotten proper help, and almost all haven't gotten the right treatment. We're working night and day to get better treatments and to really, you know, help people to live better and more fulfilling lives. But we've got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you say get help. If you have a friend, if you have a loved one who is all of a sudden seeming different, maybe despondent, maybe not enjoying things that they've enjoyed in the past, what do you do? How can you say something like, you know, how are you feeling? Is everything okay? It's kind of a touchy line, I feel, to just come right out and go, listen, you need help. You know what I mean? How do we get that conversation started?
You're absolutely right. There's I call them windows of opportunity. You find a time and a place where you can talk to the person where there aren't other people around. There's no distractions. Maybe you go grab a cup of coffee. Maybe you sit in a library. But you make it clear to them that you're willing to spend some time to talk about it. In our culture, we sort of want to take a pill or have a quick fix. When we're talking about suicide, we're talking people who have been suffering for a long time, and some of their thinking has become cloudy. And if you want to help someone, you have to be willing to say to them, you know, I don't have solutions, but I'm going to be here with you until we can get better help.
Yeah.
And that's a big commitment to make. It's not one to take lightly.
A couple years ago, I was listening to Steve Cochran's show. His show was on before ours, and he had on a guest who was talking about depression and suicidal tendencies and thoughts. And she said something that woke me up that I never really thought about, because when you encounter a friend or a family member who's depressed, you want to say, snap out of it. You got so many great things going on in your life. How can you be depressed? But she said you'd never say to a friend who has cancer or something, hey, snap out of it. Why do you have cancer? You don't need to have cancer. It is. It's something you could almost weirdly compare it to, isn't it? You can't just turn it off like a faucet.
You can't. And one of the things that we struggle a lot, is the idea that depression is a brain disease.
Yeah.
The brain is what we use to come to rational conclusions about things.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like saying to somebody who has a brain tumor, you should still be able to do calculus. You can't do calculus if that part of your brain is damaged,
right,
and needs some treatment and to be fixed.
And also, you know, anxiety and depression runs in my family a little bit. I have teenage boys who suffer with it a little bit. And a good question I got from my youngest son was, you know, I don't know that I'm depressed because I'm not sad about something. And it's not one particular item that makes you sad. It's a culmination of events and thoughts that it's not one item.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, Wendy. I hope that your sons are
they've been
are getting
treated, and that's
good
something
treatment.
I want to bring up too. When, you know, as a parent, your son or daughter displays some kind of anxiety or depression, you're their parent, so you're going to go find someone to get them help, and things are great. But when you have a friend, it's not always that easy to go, well, you should get some help, and then they say, well, where do I get some help? Where do you go get help? How do you help someone find somewhere and someone to talk to?
Yeah, this is a great part of our national discussion right now. Without getting political, we're talking about healthcare. And healthcare includes all the organs of the body, including the brain.
Yep.
And the brain is where we talk about mental health and well-being. And so if we want to constitute a better effort to get people well and keep people well, we have to be honest about the fact that it's a medical disease and can be treated. Where you can get help is you can talk to your primary care doctor. They can make a referral. They might be able to help you directly. Some people seek help through their pastoral or priest. Some people have family members who are very good at listening and providing support. The most important thing I tell everyone is that seeking help is kind of like shoe shopping. You have to find a pair of shoes that's comfortable. So if you go to a doctor and you don't feel comfortable with them, you're not going to be willing to talk about or comfortable talking about really very sensitive topics.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to say, well, that wasn't a good experience, but I'm going to try again. I'm going to find somebody who might be better able to understand my needs or provide care for me. We do the same thing with other illnesses, whether it's a knee or an elbow. Why wouldn't we do it for the brain?
Sure. Yeah. I've noticed if there's a television show and in that episode a character has either commits suicide or contemplates it, you see at the end of the episode there will be a placard that says, if you're having these thoughts, call the suicide prevention hotline number. Is that a good idea?
Absolutely. There's even a text number that you can find now. So if you Google text help suicide, it'll take you to the text number that you can reach someone 24/7. There's a 24/7 call-in number as well.
Yeah.
If you're in acute stress, distress, you can do that. Or, you know, go right to the emergency room.
Yeah.
We'll take care of you.
I can't remember when this was, but I saw an obituary that someone flat out said, you know, my child's committed suicide, and wanted to get that out in the obituary because it's not something we should hide anymore. You're not alone. You've known someone who's experiencing suicidal tendencies. You know someone who has been affected by suicide. So I think it's really important that we get it out there and talk about it. And that's kind of what this Out of the Darkness walk is all about, correct?
Absolutely. It's about awareness. It's about hope. It's about healing. Many folks who come to the walk have lost someone, and it's a really safe place to come and feel supported. And that's really important. I also want to point out some of the language that we use to talk about suicide. So just like Bill was talking about before, we wouldn't say that somebody committed cancer. We would say we've lost someone to cancer, and it's the same type of language.
The other word committed should be taken out of the equation, right?
Yeah, because it sort of intones some volition.
Oh.
Rather, in this instance, we know that depression causes cloudy thinking and judgment at times, particularly when people are having suicidal thoughts.
Right.
There's a narrowing of the focus to today or maybe tomorrow and not thinking about long term, not thinking about things that might be better at a different time or place.
Yeah.
And so we try and broaden the way we think about how we have suicidal crises and we lose people to suicide. The other thing which is really poignant is that when we lose someone to cancer, the support that comes to the family is tremendous and easy. When we lose someone to suicide, the support is sort of stilted or awkward. People don't know what to say. They don't know how to react. And I think the bottom line is people need to realize that the family and friends are suffering every bit as much as when you lose someone at a young age to cancer or to overdose or to a traffic accident. So feel free to be awkward and say, you know what, I just want to offer some support, whatever I can do.
Yeah.
We need to take a quick break, 312-981-7200, and we have some people who would like to ask questions or talk. Scott Langenecker is here, the board president of American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. The Out of the Darkness Chicagoland Walk is happening a week from Saturday on the 23rd. You can get there anytime after 9 a.m. The actual walk itself is a 3-mile walk. It kicks off at 11. And to find out more information, you can go to chicagowalk.org/WGN. Quick break. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. All right. There is a walk that's going on a week from Saturday, the September 23rd. It is Out of the Darkness Chicagoland Walk. And the board president of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Scott Langenecker is with us right now. Scott, someone had texted us off the air saying, you know, I've tried to commit suicide twice, even with treatment and medications. It's a struggle for me every day. I still have thoughts of ending my life in the back of my mind. I didn't know what to do. I asked you, there is a crisis line that people who are at this moment can text, correct? Can you tell us about this?
I can. There's a crisis text line. It's 741-741. It's manned 24/7.
Wait, I think you missed a number. It was, you just said 741-741, so there's got to be more to it than that.
You text it.
Oh, you just text it.
It's a text number.
All right.
The folks there can help you out in the immediate crisis.
Yeah.
But as we were talking about before, it's really important to have a long-term care plan, a safety plan that includes healthcare professionals, that includes family members and friends who are close to you, who can be there to help you when you go through the tough times, because we know that they're there and we're sad that they happen, but we want to make sure that you're well.
I find myself getting angry at people if someone has lost someone to suicide. There are people that say, boy, this person didn't even think of their family. Why would they have done this? You're not in your right mind. I really want to believe that people who take their own life didn't really mean to do it.
It's a complicated discussion. It's a complicated set of risk factors. But one of the things I think it's important to realize is that you'll hear this from most people who are experiencing a depressive episode, that they don't think that they're worth it. They don't believe that they deserve love and well-being and happiness. And if that's something that the disease has robbed you of feeling, suicide, thoughts of suicide are actually right next door to those thoughts, that
people
would
be
better. People would be better off without me. I'm just a burden on people. And it's a terrible thing to think about, because we all know if and when we've lost someone, that's the last thing that crosses our mind. We don't want them gone. We want them here.
Sure. The numbers are going up with preteens, aren't they?
They are, and we're not entirely sure why that is. All age groups, actually, the numbers are going up. There's something that we think happens a lot of times when a medical condition is first sort of widely talked about. There's sort of this
copycat syndrome.
I don't know if it's a copycat syndrome, but it's more of sort of this idea that people are spending more time thinking about it before we have the systems in place to actually really help people. So AFSP actually has an initiative to reduce the number of people we lose to suicide by 20% by 2025. And we're committed to that at the level of treatment, at the level of support, at the level of research. But it really requires a large amount of people and resources. And we're just getting to the point where we're getting that momentum.
Need to talk about it. Cannot sweep it under the rug anymore, because we need to do something to help. The best way for people to help is participate in the Out of the Darkness Walk.
That's one great way to help.
What are the other ways?
There are other ways you can actually be a part of these crisis helplines. You can get training. We provide training to school teachers. We provide training to medical professionals. We assist in finding training for other activities. We have our Talk Saves Lives program, which is a layperson program to intervene and help folks who may be suffering from suicidal thoughts. We have a full court press on, and we just need more help.
Well, we're here to get the word out, and you can go to afsp.org if you'd like to find out any information. We should probably give that crisis text line out again in case someone's listening right now and might need some help. It's 741-741. It's the crisis text line. You are the board president, AFSP, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Scott Langenecker. And if you can't participate next Saturday on the 23rd for the Out of the Darkness Walk, Out of the Darkness Chicagoland Walk, go to their website, afsp.org. You can help in other ways. You can also go to chicagowalk.org/WGN. thanks for getting the message out there. And good luck dropping it 20% by 2025, you said?
That's our goal. We'd really like to be able to do that or even go further. And, you know, I'd like to point out that we've had lots of help from the community. So I want to give a shout-out to the National Shooters Foundation, who has partnered with us to provide information about suicide awareness and suicide risk and gun safety.
Scott, thanks so much. Really appreciate
it. Good luck.
That's Scott Langenecker, everybody. We'll take a quick break. News is next, and then Eric Zorn stops by from the Chicago Tribune. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Yes, we do. We always sing them.
You're a little slow on that, Wendy.
I thought Bill had it. I'm doing something.
Can we do that again?
I was thinking about it.
A little more enthusiasm.
Eric, we all sing the praises of you because you're here, and it'd be silly not to.
I know. I'm sensitive, but
Eric Zorn, the sensitive Eric Zorn, is here from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, you wrote yesterday about the soda tax. Now we're about a month into it, maybe a little over a month.
It started August 2nd, I think. August 1st, August 2nd, right at the beginning of the month. Yeah, it was delayed by a month because of some actions in court.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of talk about it, a lot of pressure, and it's going to come before the county board on Wednesday. There's going to be a motion introduced to repeal the tax. And there's been a lot of jockeying going on in advance of that. If you've been watching TV at all, you've seen all ads on both sides.
Paid for by?
Well, the ads supporting the tax are paid for by Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York.
Right.
Why is he involved in this?
Well, he has some pet causes. One of them is gun control, and the other one is sugary drinks. Remember, he was the guy who tried to limit the size of the Big Gulp.
Right.
In New York.
He wanted you to have a small gulp.
Wanted you to have a small gulp, yeah. And well, the thing, first of all, I want to say about this, they're going to introduce a resolution or a motion on Wednesday to repeal the tax. And the tax passed by one vote, which is why all the commissioners who voted for have a target on their backs. And Tony Preckwinkle cast the deciding vote. What's going to happen on Wednesday probably is that this motion will be referred to a committee or tabled for another month. It's probably not going to vote on it on Wednesday. But
because why? Just a stall
just
tactic?
Because that's the way your government works.
They
introduce things and they take some. And I don't mind that they take some time to think about these things.
Yeah.
And they certainly debated this tax before it came around. And like I say, it was a close vote. But it's a massively unpopular tax.
Mm-hmm.
The polls they've taken on it show about, you know, something 80-90% of the people don't like it. I know Wendy,
well,
you're making a little face.
No, yesterday
you don't like it either, right?
Jim was going to run to the Jewel, and I said, you know, I need some Coke and Diet Coke and Sprite, and he goes, I'm not getting it at our Jewel. I mean, we make a separate trip somewhere to not pay the taxes when you're getting a bunch of soda.
I heard from a number of people this weekend. I wrote about it in my Sunday column, and I got a bunch of emails over the weekend from people who live. Now you live close enough to the county line that you can cross over. And it's a penny an ounce tax, which, you know, on a normal can of soda is 12 cents, but on a 2-liter bottle, 67 cents.
And on a case on three 12ers,
I can't do that math, but it's a lot. You know, and they do the math, and it shows up on your receipt. So it's not like one of these hidden taxes,
cause right?
Like some of the alcohol taxes, cigarette taxes, I believe are hidden. They don't show up as a separate line item on your receipt, I don't believe. And so you don't really see it. You just go, oh, that's what it costs. That's what gas costs, you know, $2.67 a gallon. But in fact, you know, there's a ton of taxes on that. The actual gas itself doesn't cost
right.
that much. So what's happening is this tax is we're being confronted with it all the time when we see it. And I heard from a bunch of people who said that they go over the border and they do their other shopping while they're there.
Right.
They say, well, if I'm going to go over to Elmhurst,
might as well get everything I need.
I'm going to go and do all my grocery shopping there. And you can save if you're buying a lot. If you're buying a month's worth of soda, you can save quite a bit of money doing that.
I don't know if I discussed this with you. It certainly came up with Wendy and myself. But a couple of weeks ago at a Mariano's, right after the tax was enforced, there was a sign. Now I get club soda. I drink a lot of club soda. Not sweetened in any way. It's just carbonated water.
You'd
That's
like to
it.
Be a member of a club. That's
right.
why you do it.
It's the only club that will have you as a member.
And even they, even at Canada Dry, we're like, we'll get back. We'll let you know. All right. So there's a big sign on the display of club soda saying that due to the sweetened beverage tax, there will be an extra penny an ounce. And I said, well, this isn't a sweetened beverage. This is just club soda.
But you didn't tell. tell anybody.
Right.
You didn't like go and berate a clerk.
No, because I don't think
that would have been the way to do it.
They would have, you know, they were following orders. What do you want us to do?
Well, you go to the customer service and say, I think you better double check this because I'm sure the sign's not there anymore. Someone must have complained.
But other people have said that in other stores, it's the same way, that they're paying for beverages that aren't sweetened.
I had a couple of letters this weekend that told me, and this sounds bizarre, but it may be true, which is that places that serve unsweetened iced tea in the, you know, when you order like at a Papa John's or whatever, and they give you the cup and they say, you know, go and fill your cup, that they've taken out the unsweetened iced tea because that isn't taxed and all the other beverages in the machine are taxed. So that if they just give you the cup, they can't account. So you could say, I'm just going to get unsweetened iced tea. You can fill it up with Coke and cheat them out of the tax.
Yeah.
So places, I'm told, now this could be fake news, but I was told this, and I'd like to have some confirmation if anyone's heard that.
No, if anyone's at one of those soda fountains right now, call us, 312-981-7200.
That would totally defeat the purpose, because there is, and I want to say this, there is a health concern that they're dealing with, that sugar beverages are a problem. It's not good.
So are chips and candy bars, though.
I know they are. So
not so loud. They'll tax those, too. Don't say so loud.
I think if they're going to impose a sin tax, they ought to impose it broadly on things like that are bad for you, that are just like, you know, full of saturated fat, full of sugar. Why not? But to pick on beverages and to have that huge tax, that's what really got people riled up.
Just not on Hot Pockets. That's all I'm
saying.
Don't
do a Hot Pocket tax. I'm against this tax 100%. However, whenever I see this commercial, it does kind of resonate. We do have a weight problem in this country, and kids are being targeted by not just soda pop companies, but anyone who makes a sugary treat. So I say to myself, this isn't the worst idea in the world, but it needs to be figured out a little bit better.
It should fall on the parent, shouldn't it, to say no more?
Well, one of the things that I talked about in this column was that I resonate with this health concern.
Yeah.
I understand. I think it's legitimate. I just wonder, where was all this health concern last year, 2 years ago? Why weren't we hearing? Why haven't there been public service campaigns? Don't give your kids these drinks. I mean, there are parents who feed their kids Mountain Dew, you know? I mean, it's just crazy.
But this also applies to unsweetened drinks, too, with, you know, Diet Coke and Diet Sodas. So
They're sweetened with artificial sweeteners.
Exactly, but that is not leading to obesity problems, so that's kind of defeating their purpose.
But there's other problems involved with artificial sweeteners.
Well, then you go with, you shouldn't have bacon. Are you going to tax bacon because there's nitrites in it?
No, there you've
better
not. You know what I mean?
No, I do know what you mean, but as far as artificial sweeteners go, I went down that rabbit hole when I was researching this column, and there's a lot of studies, but the American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, the FDA, the World Health Organization, all these places, they're okay with NutraSweet or aspartame.
Because diabetics can't have sugar, so that's what diabetics drink if they want soda.
Right, and what I'm saying is that they don't think that the health problems that have been linked to this, I mean, I think when you give rats amazing doses of aspartame, then they will develop cancer. So, I mean, it's not, but the studies have shown that like normal or everyday use of it is fine, I believe, you know, but there, you know, this is one of the things where the science is not nearly as good as it is on just like feeding your kids sugar water, which is not a good idea. And I think this whole health campaign, this whole excuse or this whole reason that the county board has put forward, like, well, this is a public health matter. It would resonate a lot more if we had been seeing this for years. Like if this were like a seatbelt tax. I mean, you don't wear your seatbelt, you get an extra tax. Mm-hmm. So we would know, like, this has been a problem for a long time. You know, I believe that it has, but it just all of a sudden all this concern for our health and Michael Bloomberg coming in here and spending millions of dollars. Another interesting thing here is that there's been a political action committee formed to go after the commissioners who voted for the tax. Michael Bloomberg has just announced that he is going to fund, you know, give as much money as it takes to support the county commissioners.
So what's in it for Michael Bloomberg, though? He's not in office here in Illinois in any way.
He's a believer. He's, like I said, he funded.
He must have stock in a water company somewhere or something.
I don't think so. No, I think he's actually just, you know, you choose your term, a do-gooder, a meddler, or whatever. But, you know,
different things.
Well, maybe not. I mean, I think the impulse is not selfish in this
point. Right.
And, you know, he funded a lot of Robin Kelly's campaign, Congresswoman Kelly, because of her stance on gun control. He put a lot of money into that.
Oh.
For instance, he's a rich guy, and he spends his money that way, and he thinks that this is an important issue. And you know, and I would agree with him that, I mean, I like these ads that I see about, you know, these, you know, the kids looking at the vending machine where you see diabetes
and
kidney ailments.
That's very effective.
It is, and you know, I think any parent who's tempted to give their kids, you know, I mean, I'm talking about little kids, you shouldn't be giving your little kids these drinks. You really shouldn't.
But getting back to your original point, is this a dire enough issue to most voters to where they'd say, wow, Tony Preckwinkle spearheaded this and it's costing me extra money, I'm not voting
for it? See, I think so. I do think so because most people don't pay any attention to county commission races or even the county board president race. I mean, it's one of those offices. Most people don't really even know what the county does. You know, it runs the jails and the hospitals and the courts. But,
right.
But most people, you know, the county actually doesn't intersect with your life most of the time. So when it comes time to vote for your county, I mean, can you name your county commissioner? I'm not sure that I can, actually. I'm kind of embarrassed to say.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see a lot of ads out there, you see a lot of mailers, this, don't vote for him. He voted for this tax. I think that's going to sway people
because
people really, really don't like this tax, which is why I think that the county board may pull back. But I do think that they need money.
Yeah, right.
The county does need money.
There's no question. So. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're at 312-981-7200. More after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Eric Zorn is here. He's our guest, Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. Eric, today, as you're well aware, is the 16th anniversary of the attacks, September 11 attacks. It's still hard to look at that date and not wince just a little bit, isn't it? It's awful.
Yeah, I didn't realize, I didn't see it coming. Actually, I mean, I knew yesterday was the 10th of September, and this morning I looked at a calendar and went, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, Hurricane Irma is taking a lot of the press away from
your disaster consciousness is being absorbed by that
kind of though bit. I mean, we've all been looking at the damage that it has done to Florida. It covered the whole state, and then I feel like, oh man, we should never forget 9/11.
It's, you know, we all remember where we were, and you guys must have been on the air, right, at the time?
No, I was on my way to work, and our program director, Jeff Schwartz, at the time said, go pick up your kid in daycare and go home with your family and be together, because no one knew what was going to happen down here.
Well, that's really true.
Thanks, Jeff Schwartz.
I didn't come into the office either that day.
It was, you didn't want to go down in the city fearing something was going to happen here.
I was careful about my, remember they had the anthrax scare right after that?
Yes.
I was, you guys have this too, where you, every time you get an envelope from someone you didn't recognize, you're like,
I have Bill
him.
Open them
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, Wendy throws them my way.
And you ask Kevin to do it.
Right, right.
But I remember thinking at the time that things had changed completely.
Yeah.
And they did.
Like, and we lost our innocence, kind of.
We lost our innocence, and that this was going to become a regular occurrence, that we were going to have massive terrorist attacks here, like they have around the world. I mean, places, you know, in the Middle East where, you know, a market bombing with 100 people killed is not unheard of by
right.
any means. And it's been sort of amazing that we haven't, I mean, we had Orlando, right? I mean, there have been, you know, incidents where many people have died, but we haven't had anything close to that scale. We haven't had another over here. We haven't had another airline incident that I'm aware of. Have
right.
we? I mean, am I
no, but
something?
I was scared for a really long time.
Oh yeah,
I really was.
I was. You sort of wondering, were we ever going to fly again? Were comedians ever going to be able to tell jokes again?
Yeah.
And it was just this incredible pall that came over this country. And I it was unlike anything that I remember or has happened since. And I do think that we have gotten back to normal, right? I mean,
you had to.
Yes and no. It'll change the way, probably in our lifetimes, that air travel is conducted. I mean, now, and you still see people complain you have to wait in a long line
right.
to be screened before you get on an airplane. I'm fine with that.
But there still are people who get through with, like, these fake dummy bombs.
Oh, without a doubt.
So, I mean, are we better off?
I think we are. It's almost miraculous that nothing major has happened in 16 years. Because, as you said, I thought, I don't know what normal will be from now on. If they pulled this off, how many more guys are going to go, oh, I can one better that. I can one better that.
And there's so many soft targets in our country, really.
Without
think
a
about
doubt.
It. I mean, they have hardened some of them. It's hard to get into ball games and big arenas anymore without being wanded. But, gosh, you know, the subway system, a lot of our other transportation systems are vulnerable. Our shopping malls.
Well, you remember right after it happened, they said you got to watch the water supply because for some reason they had determined that would be their next move, was to go after a water supply. Nothing really major has happened, but I hope they're staying vigilant and keeping on it.
They must be, right?
They have to be.
But the other thing is that one thing I do remember right in the aftermath was how we all came together
yes.
in this way. Up and down my block, on the northwest side, everyone had a flag out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everyone had a flag out for,
I still do.
For a couple of weeks. You still do?
I have it up all the time.
Wow, good for you. So nobody does it our neighborhood anymore. So on holidays we do, but and also remember, like, President Bush at the time had his approval ratings went like to 90%. Like, right. We were all like behind him, and I mean,
we
and,
came
and
together.
I mean, I don't think that the approval ratings for any president should probably ever aspire to 90%. Our country's too divided on so many things. But the fact that we all just set those aside and focused on this, it was a reminder. It was a good reminder. That we are, you know, we are a nation of people, and we do have a lot in common, and we share a lot of values, and we let our differences really get under our skin. And it's, you know, I think we're as polarized now as we ever were, maybe before.
The one that always makes me emotional, and it's crazy that it does, but in the history of sports, one of the most heated rivalries are the Yankees and the Red Sox. They just do not share any kind of love for each other.
Right.
But after this happened, there was a big sign, a huge banner, Boston loves New York. And I just went, well, I didn't think I'd ever see this. That's how serious this became, was that the people of Boston were reaching out saying, hey, New York, we got you. We love you.
Well, there was some talk about that. I think one of the conservative commentators talked about the spirit of 9/12, that the country came together, and that it would be good to try to anchor ourselves in that spirit more often than we do.
Yeah.
And it's something to think about. I mean, I don't know what are you supposed to do on the anniversary every year of this event. I mean, we all, like I said, we remember where we were, what was going on. But do we sort of step back and go, yeah, you know, when we were all under attack,
right?
We all felt vulnerable. We all came together. We all realized that, we have a lot in common. We have a lot, share a lot of values, and we shouldn't let that escape us.
It partly because someone else was the villain? That all of America perceived, whoever did this, that's the bad guy. We got to come together and be against that bad guy.
Right.
Whereas now, I don't know if anyone's positive who the bad guy is.
Well, Trump's the bad guy. That's the.
All right, I guess.
In Eric Zorn's opinion.
See, I've already ruined the spirit of that.
No, right. You did.
I've made it partisan.
You did.
It's a reflex with me. So.
It's Eric Zorn, everybody. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. He's always good. Thanks, Eric. We appreciate it. We'll take a quick break and then find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.